This morning I'm going to be talking about a national study to enroll women with HIV who are not in care into care, and I'm going to be talking about an overview of the national study, and then I'm going to talk about our local work in Brooklyn. Oh, but first, I want to recognize Dr. Jeffrey Birnbaum, who is a principal investigator, and Rachel Peters, who is a project coordinator. I have no relationships to disclose. This project is part of a Health Resources and Services Administration project, HRSA. Every once in a while, HRSA, which provides safety net services, puts out special projects of national significance, or SPINS project. Many of you may be familiar with those. And they put out one in 2008, began 2009, on enhancing access and retention to quality and HIV care for women of color. Okay, so what the entire initiative is meant to do, and we're doing this as well in Brooklyn, is to address barriers to entry into care and remaining in care, evaluate interventions to address barriers, measure the relative success of interventions, and also to look at the national level in the generalizability and the reproduction of successful interventions. And that's our logo at the bottom, by the way. Rachel Peters came up with that, and I'd be shot if I didn't put a few power logos at the bottom of slides. So thank you, Rachel. In this presentation, I'll talk quickly about the epidemiological data, describe the our intervention, I'll explain what power is, our expected outcomes, and preliminary findings from a sample of women. Okay, everyone knows the epidemiology of HIV/AIDS disproportionately affects poor people and people of color. Research has shown that women delay, defer, or are otherwise untreated for HIV. Here's the obligatory, this is the latest slide from the CDC. The yellow slide on your right is the U.S. population of women, and on your left are 10,000 women with HIV who are primarily women of color. Okay, in Brooklyn, we have four sites in central Brooklyn and two in what's called downtown Brooklyn. We have an adolescent clinic, the HEAT Clinic, at Downstate Medical Center, Interfaith Medical Center, the Brooklyn Hospital Center, and which are all hospital-based, and Housing Works, which is a whole group of organizations across New York City. There are two clinics that are in Brooklyn, so there are partners. The home base is the Family and Adolescent Children's Experience at SUNY, or the FACES program, which is the coordinating program. So the POWER program is a peer outreach worker engagement and retention program. And what we did is we added peer outreach workers to an already existing network of HIV care providers. Again, we had four sites from around central Brooklyn. We had underlying Ryan White Part D funding for women and children, which we now have actually just lost, and we're trying to scramble to keep our baseline network together. And what we've done differently is that we've relied on the peer outreach worker case manager dyad. And the peers are HIV positive women who were hired as part of the clinical team. They attend team conferences. They go out into communities. They knock on doors. They make phone calls. They take women to court. They take women to Medicaid. They do whatever they can to engage women and bring them into care. If it means hanging out and chatting for an hour, that's what they do. The peer outreach workers also, by the way, most of whom have not graduated from high school, one of whom has, despite limited literacy, they've been able to master very, very complex and long data collection interviews. And what we've been able to show is that even peers with limited education, with proper training, can conduct very complex interviews successfully. All right, so what we did, or what we're doing, is we're prospectively enrolling a sample of women with HIV who are not in care. Our enrollment period, baseline period, began in November 2010 and will be ending in July 2014. And the criteria for entry into this particular study is women who are newly diagnosed but not in care. So in other words, women who have tested positive but have never been in care, women who have previously been receiving care but not in the last 6 months, a lot of women like that, women who have changed providers, and women who are assessed at risk for dropping out of care. And those women are predominantly in this group, either young women aged 18 to 24, or one of our sites is predominantly associated with a methadone clinic next door, so women who are substance users. Okay, what do we expect for outcomes? We expect improved rates of consistent medical care for at least 18 months, with medical and visits at least every 6 months. We expect to see improved stable clinical indicators, stable improved T-cell count, and an undetectable viral load. We also are using a measure used by the CDC of self-assessed health, the CDC health-related quality of life, 14. There's 14 items. And we expect to see reduced barriers to medical care. Okay. Data collection is happening at baseline as women are enrolled, at 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and 18 months. We're also looking at the types and frequencies of interventions by all the staff so that we're getting a measure of intensity of resources used to keep women in care. And we expect that to change by or be different by some subgroups, like the adolescents take a lot of work. Women who are actively using drugs take a lot of work. And there are some women who just life circumstances dropped out and seem to have lower intensity. But we'll be looking at resources used. So I'm reporting today on baseline survey data. And the data I'm reporting on are the sociodemographic characteristics, the CDC health-related quality of life, and a set of 30 barriers that were developed for the study across sites as being present, yes or no, and then we later coded them into three barrier domains. They're personal domains, and I'll describe what some of those are. Provider barriers to care, and structural or systemic barriers to care. Okay. Just whipping through some of the findings here. Most of the women are of African descent. Many are from the Caribbean islands, from central Brooklyn. There are some African women. There's a Senegalese community nearby, and then there's some African Americans. There are very few Latinas in this group because Latinas don't live in central Brooklyn. Surprisingly, to me at any rate, is that at least half of our sample has already graduated from high school. Now, sociodemographics, 70% of women describe themselves as single, but in this slide, a take-home message is that 23% of women are either not living at home or are homeless. And by not living at home, those are drug treatment centers and halfway houses. That's what that category represents. Many are living with other people. They don't live in a household by themselves, and 40% of them have children in their own children under 18 living with them. Most women have some form of Medicaid. However, very few women work, and I had to lump together the full-time, part-time, disabled, and student groups, but it's literally like a few women are working full-time, a very few women are working part-time, disabled, student. So you have a group that is, and you also have a large group who are not even looking for work, and they're just saying, I'm not looking for work. Most women have income derived from public sources, so from welfare, SSI, Social Security, and very few from 10%, 11% from salaried work. All right, so the first question in the CDC Healthy Days module is, in general, and this is a questions that are used in a lot of surveys, your health is, and the interesting thing is that nearly 50% say their health is fair or poor. The survey then goes on to ask three questions about how many days in the last month was your health not good. And physical health, on average, women said, I had 13 days where my health was not good. Mental health, over 50% of days. My health kept me from activities, 16.4 days on average. Kind of off the record, when these questions are asked, these can be normed to U.S. data, and we would be careful with a sample of 121 women to generalize, but the number of days is, the number of days is around 5, where most women say that their health is not good. So these are preliminary data are showing that there's much poorer health status among this group. And I also have the opportunity to work with the national evaluation team, and we know that our local results mirror what the national results are showing now with over 500 women enrolled. Okay. Activity limitation and healthy days. In the last 30 days, how many days has pain interfered with your functioning? How many days has interfered? How many days have you felt sad, blue, and depressed, and it's interfered with your functioning? How many days have you felt worried, tense, anxious, did not get enough sleep, felt healthy, full of energy? And this is the average number of days. Take-home message is, women are saying that they don't feel good and they have they're limited in activity more than half the days of the month. Now, the last question asked, how many days on average did you feel healthy and full of energy? Some women are saying 16 days on average. So there's a kind of response bias to say yes, but there's a difference coming up. That I'll get to. Okay, when we looked at the 30 barriers, these are just the top five for presentation sake. 16 of 30 barriers were mentioned more than half the time as being present, but the top five were very interesting. I need more information to get HIV care. I have a fatalistic sense about myself. I should just learn to live with HIV. I should just get back on track on my own. I'm afraid to go to a provider because I think I might be judged. And finally, I have uncertainty about my housing or finances, and this is a competing need for me. Okay. So when we looked at personal provider and system barriers, lumping together the personal barriers, there were 12 barriers that were considered personal, 8 provider and 8 system. On average, women said that they had 6 personal barriers, a little less than that, provider barriers, and much lower percentage, average number of system barriers, which was a surprise to us because we thought that system barriers would be more important. Okay, really, really busy slide, but here's the punchline. The punchline is that women who say they're in poor health are much more likely on a number of saying they're in poor health in a bunch of different ways are much more likely to say that they have personal barriers to care, somewhat less significant provider, but very importantly that they have systemic barriers to care. So what we're finding out is there's a kind of correlational relationship. If you feel bad, you also tend to experience barriers to care. Okay, so there's a strong positive relationship between barriers, poor physical and mental health, and a strong inverse relationship between saying, I feel healthy and full of energy, and barriers to care. The high rates of personal barriers, getting back on track on your own, may be a reflection of not feeling well and reflect an uncertainty about whether health care can help with HIV, from things women have said. Our next step is to examine this relationship in multivariate models and determine the relative strength of the relationship among barriers, self-assessed health, and retention in care in the long term. So in the next couple of years, we'll be able to start presenting outcome data rather than correlational data and outcomes for women of color entering care. I'd just like to thank HRSA and SPINS and all the colleagues at the various sites and all the women who have made this project a very successful one to date. Thank you.